like repeat the question so that it shows up on here?
Yes.
Okay.
It already did.
Just like that.
All right, let's do it one more time. Let's draw into that power. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, I'd like to start out with any questions or comments you would like to make. And feel free. All feedback is appreciated. Do you have any questions about something you might have heard in the weekend, or are you going to leave me up here the way I think is going to happen, and nobody going to say anything?
I'd like to say something.
Yes,
it's more of a comment. I'm
sure.
Derek. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hi, Derek.
There has been this thematic topic that has developed over the last year, which is based on the idea that when we go to meetings that we have to sound really good and we have to look really good and no one can really know how we're struggling because we can't, you know, let people really see the part of ourselves that we're attempting to hide, because then my recovery is headed in a really negative direction. And so at our home group, we've started laying it all out there. You know, I'm going to bring my darkness and my dark passenger, as I like to refer to it, to the table, because people have to see that, because it's not red flag that I'm heading for relapse. It's all about the intent. What if God is really honing and polishing my character through the struggles that I'm going through? He's working on me. Instead of saying, oh, I got to go to more meetings, I need to meditate more, I need to pray more, there's something I'm doing wrong. Sometimes the struggle is part of the path. And so we've started talking about that in our meeting. And now you guys come, and that's the theme of your weekend. And so I see the connectivity of it all. And it's very fitting for many of the people that are sitting in this room this weekend. So that really warmed my heart to hear that and see that over the course of the weekend.
And thank you, Terry. And yeah. So that makes you feel what? That we had a weekend like this that makes you feel?
It makes me feel I am fascinated when you open yourself up to looking for the connectivity in things, there will always be there. And that keeps me seeking. You know, it feeds the aspirant inside of me. Mm. It really does. Mm.
Thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you.
The invitation, my son talks about the power of invitation, and the invitation doesn't need to be verbal. It can just be a person who's open, and we can talk about things. And I hope that's the way we felt in this weekend. I'm really happy to hear that about your home group. Anybody else would like to make a comment?
I would. Steve, alcoholic drug addict.
Hey, Steve.
First thing, Mickey, Nate, thank you very much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. Mickey, one thing you mentioned was if 10 years sober, you had an experience with non-alcoholic beer.
Right.
And you drank and you wanted to get a case of it and go back and drink some with your wife and all that stuff. So as we progress in sobriety, it's been my experience that we're not always pushed to relapse with drugs and alcohol. Maybe it's attention or working out or being an asshole or driving too fast.
An asshole plays a major part in this, but please go ahead. That's another theme of the weekend. But
so what would constitute a relapse and then resulting in changing the sobriety date?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Intention.
Intention.
Don't you think? If somebody's setting out to do a drug or to drink to get an effect voluntarily, I think they've got to reset their sobriety date. I was in there drinking what I thought was alcohol-free beer. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes.
Now, we've had occasion to, I remember somebody had a bottle of cold duck, and they were all, group was going to go, you know, it's a
purple champagne. It probably doesn't even exist anymore. All right, so it's a kind of a champagne. And the people in the back seat were trying to get this thing open, and they could drink, and he couldn't. He was alcoholic. He said, give me that thing. And he put it in his mouth and, you know, cranked the cork out of it and got a major shot down his throat. He did not change his sobriety date. He did not go back to drinking. He joined. He had to stand in the stupid row for a while. We have one of those. Do you guys have that? No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, what I'm saying, that, but the intention, it's like taking prescription meds. Is my intention to mitigate the pain in the surgery I just had in my foot, or I'm now enjoying floating? And we got to look at that. We got to look at it. Because, in, you know, I like intoxicants, but I don't ever want to go back. So I did not reset my sobriety.
And I'd like to chime in on that as well, because I've had a couple, but one that stands out for me, where I had been sober a period of time, and I was out to dinner, and I had a dessert, right? I wanted a dessert. I didn't want a dessert soaked in alcohol, right? But that I don't know what it was, to tell you the truth.
Sure, that's
but what happened was, is I'm out, zero intention. I wasn't plotting this. I wasn't planning this. I didn't intend to have alcohol touch my system. But what happened was I took a bite of this dessert, and all of a sudden I tasted it. I knew it was alcohol. And when it talks about in here, we recoiled as if from a hot flame, that's the experience I had to that. I was immediately sick to my stomach. I felt repulsed. I was scared. It wasn't like I wanted to jump on the wagon and just start going for it again. Which is kind of strange, because I have always been victim to that physical compulsion. And in that moment, God didn't let me go there, is the best that I can understand it, you know? But it definitely wasn't my motive to just eat six desserts and tie one, you know?
I tell people, if I'm going out, I ain't going out on Mother Murphy's rum balls, you know what I mean?
Well, you get both sides of the coin in here. You get the purists that say you shouldn't take prescription medication, you shouldn't take over-the-counter medication, you shouldn't use mouthwash and things of that nature. So I guess I just want to hear your...
I use mouthwash, but it's alcohol-free, and this time it is alcohol-free.
Right.
And I did have a foot operation, and I had had it locally. And so they said, you know, Mr. Musset, your doctor's going to be leaving now. Do you need anything for pain? You know, I'm coming from the leather strap, dude. We'll do that. No, I don't need anything for pain because it felt fine. About 5 minutes later, the thing that he gave me in my foot wore off, and I'm begging. I'm holding on to anybody's leg. Get me some pain meds. And I got Percocet, because what's the one with that's so popular?
Oxy.
No, it's not Oxy. It's not that heavy. It's
Vicodin.
I like this. It's musical drug.
How long can we go around?
All right, Nathan. Vicodin.
Yeah.
I've tried Vicodin, and it doesn't kill the pain. It doesn't kill the pain for me. So I said, give me some Percocet. And I took, you're supposed to be able to take it every 6 hours. And I took, like, maybe two of those. And I could have been three. And I didn't feel any effect. I wasn't going for being loaded, but I did notice when I stopped taking it that I had called my daughter and told her how much I love you. You know what I mean? So I was definitely under the influence, but again, intention. Because I had a serious operation on that foot, man. I really, and you got to get ahead of the pain and stay ahead of it. So, I mean, just from whatever, that's my experience.
And for me, too, it really comes down to the fact that I'm the one that has to live with the truth, and it's mine, and it doesn't have to be approved by you, right? Nor do I have to broadcast whatever it is that I'm dealing with at every meeting I go to and make sure every member of Alcoholics Anonymous knows that I had a bite of a dessert with alcohol in it or something like that. You know what I mean? It's the truth that I have to live with, and I guarantee we will know if our motive was to do something that wasn't necessarily on track, right? And that's what I have to live with. I can try to live with that secret, or I can face the truth. Because at the end of the day, what really matters, right? It's a date. Do I want to reset my date, or do I want to compromise my soul and potentially be down the road and out the door? You know? And yeah, people taking the drinking test. you know.
Marty Mantis, Marty Mantis, yeah. But then you do have to reset yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Would you rather, like, I've witnessed that where someone, you know, 10, 15 years down the road is doubting their alcoholism. Maybe I'm just a hard drinker. I don't know that I'm actually having, or that I ever had a physical reaction to alcohol. That's not an easy consideration to face, right? Because if I drink, I'm going to have to lose my 10, 15 years, right? But if I don't, I'll never really know. So, and those people have reset their sobriety dates, and that is what it is.
My daughter's alcoholic, and she came to a place, I think she had like 4 or 6 years sober, I can't remember. And she called me and she said, Dad, I cannot admit to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. And so she said, what should I do? And I said, have you talked to your sponsor? And she said, I talked to my sponsor. I referred her to some of the elders in the program that I know. She talked to them, and she still couldn't square it. And I said, guess what, sweetie? It's time to drink. And she took the Marty Mann test, which most of you may know it. But anyway, it's 2 drinks a day, no more, no less. Drink what you want. Same time each day for 30 days. She got 10 days in, and she said, I'm done. But the book says if you're having trouble diagnosing yourself, thanks, Nate, step over to the nearest bar room and drink. Now, people will go through horror about that, but I'll tell you, my daughter stood up as a 10-minute speaker at Fellowship at the Spirit Conference in Colorado and shared that, and she has helped. I sponsor a guy in another state, and his wife has been in AA for 17 years, and she is not an alcoholic. And she did the Marty Mann test. She did it faithfully. She was not thirsty. She did not want to be intoxicated. She drinks now, and it's okay. But, you know, really, the truth is what is important. And I'm proud of my home group for that. We encourage people to know the truth about their lives. We're not going around giving the Marty Mann test out all the time. But, I mean, you could be on meth. You could be on crack. You could be on all these other things. But what we're asking somebody is, what is your relationship with alcohol? Because, again, alcohol could be considered a non-addictive substance. What is your relationship with alcohol? If you are kicked in gear by drinking, you're an alcoholic. And we help people to understand that we're not here for conformity. We're here for the truth to the best of our ability. Yes?
My name's Miriam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Miriam.
I found that throughout my sobriety, if I look back, there have been peaks and valleys, and there are some times when I feel so close to my higher power, and I'm humming along and doing the deal and whatnot, and then other times when it's not there, and I feel empty, and I feel desolate, and I have to draw on that feeling from the closer times to get me through this, and I used to hate that. I would think to myself, oh, man. But now I see it as the springboard. It means for me that I have to go further deeper into my relationship with my higher power. And this weekend has been awesome because I've been going through something like that. And, you know, just praying, you know, just God, just tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do, and I will do it. And God put some people in my life, and then my friend Kathy a couple of months ago said to me, well, I'm doing this thing at the monastery, blah, 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 why don't you come? I think you'd really like it. I said, okay, great. And so I signed up. You know, I'm a good time girl. I like a good conference. And came and got some really good, specific guidance from not only the two of you, but from a lot of people, just listening to conversations, talking to people, and I'm all fired up. So it's good to be all fired up. So, because, you know, there are some times when I'm just, God, where are you? You know, are you still there? Give me a sign. Let me know. And, yeah. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Miriam. I'll tell you, 40% or 60%, because I can't remember numbers very well, of the Psalms are complaining to God. Where are you? What is up? How long do I have to dangle over the Grand Canyon here? One of the things that I've noticed, you mentioned that it was in your spirit that you had that highs and lows. I watch our finances. And our finances are slim pickings. And I remember in my pages, you know, complaining to God, we'd like to have some money here. And he wrote back, you don't need more money, son. You need more God. And which is like, we have lived almost 14 years really on God, really on God. But what happens is, I need brick walls in my life because I will reach, just exactly what you said, I will reach out more firmly in my faith. Because I can't kid myself that selling all of our furniture right now is going to solve the problem. What has happened to it is it'll happen the next month and we won't have anything to sit on. Make any sense? This, God means business. You know, he absolutely means business. He is willing to go to any length for my victory over alcoholism. And when he kicks it in gear, man, it is like, I look like a basset hound, man. I mean, they're on my shoulders. Yes,
Glenn. Hi, my name's Glenn. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Glenn. Hey,
I would, first of all, thank you both for sharing your love with us this weekend.
Thank you.
I would like to hear a little bit about your experience with taking a man through the steps as far as time and quality, quantity, time and effort. I'd also like to hear, as the second part of that question would be, if a man slips, you know, what's your experience with that? So that's my question.
Did everybody hear the question?
No.
Who wants to know our experience in taking men through the steps, the process, the time, the quality, whatever, and then what happens if he slips in regard to that, in taking him through the steps or not? So that's the question. Nate, you look like a man who can field this.
We'll see. honestly, like we've already talked about a lot throughout the weekend. For me, the process of taking someone through the steps cannot be academic. It can't be process execution to the T, right? Because that's what I know how to do really well. It's easy. I want to teach someone the process. To kind of facilitate an experience is something much different that I've never quite experienced up until, you know, current sponsorship. Where it wasn't necessarily learning more and knowing the book and saying, oh, I see it there, but I don't feel it in here. And for me, that was the disconnect. So what it looks like, and believe me, like the transition from the way that I take men through the steps now from what I used to do was so difficult. It felt like I was falling short. I should be doing something more. If I'm not giving them a line-by-line experience, I'm letting them down. They're going to be missing out. Where is God in all that, right? Since when am I responsible for what God does with people's lives? So basically what it looks like for me is that it's not an instructional experience. It's more of an organic dialogue, interaction. Let's make what's in this book a part of you kind of thing. How do I get this into me, right? And that's what's done for me as well, where a lot of the time I have to face some pretty uncomfortable considerations because it's not just here. It's like all of a sudden I'm looking to find it in me. What I do is I meet with people once a week for an hour, usually no more, no less, an hour, and we just dive right in. And every situation is different, I guess, to an extent, because as it turns out, a lot of the people that I work with are not necessarily people who have just come to Alcoholics Anonymous and have, you know, never seen the big book before. That's just kind of the workload God's given me over the last 4 years, it seems, is people that have been sober 5, 10, 30 years that are dying in Alcoholics Anonymous and want to have an experience with the book that they've been lacking. So I can't speak to everything. I can speak to my experience. And what it is everything we do is out of this book, 100%. But it's not going to be an educational experience. I'm not going to try to sit you down and teach you more, right? It's more about the experience. What does that look like? And usually what it does, like I spoke to maybe throughout the course of the steps, is we talk through it, right? We talk through it. We qualify you for alcoholism first and foremost. And I won't go through all 12, obviously, but that's what it looks like. Usually it's exercising a step together on the phone, usually, face-to-face if possible, but a lot of the time it's not. And so we'll talk through maybe, you know, the first half of the first step. See what your relationship with alcohol looks like, right? There's 43 pages. That could take us like 6 weeks to read through, right? To be honest. You know the book. Like, that's what I'm saying. Most of the people that I work with, I'm not trying to teach you anything more. You know the book. You know it well. Just as good as I do. So let's see what we can do here in terms of integrating this into your actual being. And that's how that comes about. Like that, and inevitably, it happened to me, it happens to everyone that I work with. When I was forced to kind of exercise the steps this way, I felt like it was an outer body experience. It was so uncomfortable and so different, and it forced me to look in areas that I hadn't necessarily considered, right? But what happens is, too, we talk about whatever it is we're talking about, the step, and then there's that week in between where I spend or they spend that full week in consideration of whatever it was that we were talking about. Because what we do is scratch the surface. We chip at the top of the iceberg. But what's really going to happen in terms of that transformation for that individual, we need to set the ball in motion rolling in the right direction. And that's what happens during our one-hour talk. But there are a whole lot of hours between that hour and next week that they get to really dive into that consideration with God and be uncomfortable and not have a box to check, to just be and ask God, what's going on here, God, right? What does this look like? What does my powerlessness over alcohol actually look like? And sit in meditation and consideration and actually consider that. People are like, can I write something? Can I do something? No. Just try to be, right? Because that's harder than writing and doing. So that's what it looks like. It's more of it's an interactive thing. And, you know, and again, like I said, there was a time where I thought for sure I was falling short, you know, that by not taking people line by line, because that's what I knew how to do previously, that I was somehow missing the point. And I can tell you sitting here now, that's absolutely not the point. The transformation that I've seen in people's lives as a result of what I'm talking about right now speaks for itself. And it's not a testament to me. It's not a testament to Nikki. It's a testament to the power of God. And
what is kind of a testament?
Okay. It's kind of a testament to Nikki. But the reality is it's not about the sponsor. It's about God. Right? And if I'm opening myself up to be a vessel for God, I have to have the faith that it's not my responsibility to produce an outcome for this person. If God's got them, usually that's my belief. If God brings someone to me, he's already got them. Right? I just need to facilitate this experience to the best that I can and let God do his work. Right? And what was the second half of your question?
That was a slip.
The slip, that's right.
What's your experience if someone does?
Yep. And there have been instances where, again, before I started being honest with myself, I would basically work with someone forever if they slipped 100 times. Sometimes I find that it's not effective, right? If someone, maybe it's just I'm the easiest guy to come back to, right? Sometimes I find that that's the case where if someone slips and they just don't want to go through the discomfort of circling back with someone else. They just want to kind of pick up where we left off a lot of instances, right? Which is not necessarily, you know, helpful in terms of growing and being uncomfortable and all that. But then there are instances, like I said, no two situations are the same. I have a man that I work with currently who did, in fact, go out. And I talk about this stuff with my sponsor. Like, should I do this? I don't know. I feel conflicted, right? And it's not like a yes, no, just easy situation. It's like, it's very subjective to the situation. So to have objective conversations with our sponsors is extremely helpful in hashing out the truth. Like, what's my motive here, right? Am I trying to save this guy? Do I think that I'm the only person on planet Earth that can bring him to where he needs to be? Because that's true sometimes. And that's not necessarily the case, but for this example in particular, this man, I had worked with him for maybe a year, and he had been sober a period of years before that, and he disappeared. And he just didn't disappear on alcohol, he disappeared on hard drugs, you know? And he really went for it. And he basically just about killed himself to the point where there was nothing left. And there was something in me that just felt, because he had called me and he said, you know, I'm done. I've been out for the last 6 months. I've got nothing left in me. Will you pick back up with me? And originally I said, I don't think so. that was just what I felt. You know, it felt like the right thing. Like, I don't want to get back on the carousel. And it's not because I don't love you as a person. I just don't know that it would be the most effective thing. And this doesn't always happen, but what happened was, is as I walked away from that initial conversation, this guy's mind, or his name just kept burning in my mind. That doesn't always happen, right? So 3 months go by, and it's still there. I'm just, like, thinking about this guy. And it's not like I'm trying to. It's just there. So I call him, and I was like, you know, I just can't shake the feeling that God's not done with the work we have to do here. I know I said no initially, but if you know, you'd still like to get back involved here, I think we can do something with it. And the reality that came out, because it wasn't necessarily, let's go back and make sure, you know, you have a good education. It's like, what wasn't going on? And as it turned out with this particular instance, there was a pile of amends this high that had never been dealt with, right? That man, like, went on a fury and took care of all those amends, and he's been sober ever since. So I don't know. There's no necessarily right or wrong answer. In that particular instance, it worked out, and then there have been other instances where it wasn't there. And God is the ultimate judge, I guess. At least that's what
There's
I rely
There's no one answer.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that's helpful.
The lady behind you.
Meredith, alcoholic.
Meredith.
I know we're running out of time.
We're not running out of time. We got
to go. That's what Tarek said. It was really very refreshing for me to come to a place where we can openly share about our brokenness. Because something happens sometimes, I think, as we go through this process and become members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have an obligation to kind of clean up and look good, you know, and I think something gets lost there. And I came to this retreat at the invitation of a friend who reminded me that I need to be fed. I do a lot to help others. It's the foundation stone of my recovery, is no doubt. I do it to save myself. But it sometimes takes the wind out of my sails. On top of that, having had an experience in sobriety where I've lost a significant amount of people in a very short time, it meant a lot to me. And I never shook my faith in God. In fact, it galvanized it in a way. But I find times where I have the dark night of the soul. And I come in here, and I think I'm coming with this big book experience. Bring your highlighters and bring your pens, and we're just going to study the daylights out of this thing and get more revelation. And instead what happens is an intersection of the text and the experiences, which I find amazing how you two, what your experience has been and the way you work with others and what you discover as a young man in sobriety and what you have walked through, continue to go back to being lashed to God, you know, being driven back to God again and again. But what I see how it applies, not only that, which has given me such great hope, but also, you know, God does not make too hard turns those who earnestly seek. I come to this place at this time, and I see evidence of these three spirits that have left me that are here. But it also drives me back to the practical application of this program. And in it is, at the crux for me, it is 10, 11, and 12. And sometimes it's too much 12 for me. Sometimes it's not enough 11. But really, 10 is the jumping, is really where that growth can continue, because I have to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And how does that look, especially when I sponsor so many people? They all have their calling times. And what I've taken from this is the efficiency of the application of this process, which will keep me engaged with those people instead of looking at the phone and going, you know? I'm calling them all together. And thanks to what I've heard here, there's a more efficient way we can look at 10 every day. I was introduced to the 10 as an inventory. It's written, blah, blah, blah. And then I heard someone speak last year who said, That nightly review is more about how well did I do this thing during the day, those four steps. And so now, you know, when I'm open, I get a message of how this can go forward. And I can continue to help them, but also continue to hold them to what they need. Because that's what it's about, how they can stay close to their God.
Then we have that to share. We have that to share.
Yeah, so that's been tremendous, absolutely tremendous. And there was one more thing I was going to say, but in the spirit of this group in this meeting, I don't remember what it is.
Hey, it's a kind of another theme.
That's right.
It's the Alzheimer's AA theme. It's the third A, Alzheimer's. Mills, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mills, alcoholic.
Hey, Mills.
I've had a huge experience with psychotropic drugs, drugs for depression, drugs for anxiety, and they've been a huge part of my story until recently. I took myself off them. I was also drinking a lot of beer, which I don't think is the right way to go off them. Months ago, but at this point, I'm totally off them and having a kind of a different experience than I've had previous. Do y'all have, I know there are a lot of opinions, you know, ranging from people, meetings telling people to stop using, you know, depression medicine altogether, and, you know, you hear stories about people killing themselves, to, you know, maybe integrating it as part of your routine, and I just don't know where I stand because I've seen them as both helpful and harmful to my spiritual experience, so I was just kind of wondering what y'all's opinion or insight on. And also, this is unrelated, but you mentioned steel on steel as a soul crushing exercise. Soul-stealing exercise. I've had a pretty similar experience. What is your opinion on a steel on steel group today?
We'll take the first one.
Let's go to the drugs first. Dr. Musset here decided early on in counseling my brother alcoholics that I got it wired down. We're not going to take, you know, any antidepressants. We're not going to do that thing. I got this guy off Prozac and he wanted to kill his parents. And I said, you know, I think you ought to be taking Prozac. So that's how that one worked out. But here's another instance. I was standing down in my home group. We meet in the basement of this church, big surprise. And this woman, 5 years sober, was standing there in the room, and we were practically the only two people in there. And she looked at me like this, and she said, Mickey, is this all there is? And she didn't need to spell out what she was talking about. I said, absolutely not. There is so much more. In 4 months, she got rocketed into the fourth dimension. She gave up 12 years of Prozac on her own. I didn't say squat. I didn't even know she was doing all that. And she got off Prozac. She got rocketed into a fourth dimension. And she had an opportunity, Mills, to work this out of the book the way we've been talking this weekend. There's tremendous power here. Normally, I tell people, talk to your doctor about weaning off. Now, if you've already got yourself off, that's another experience. You just keep an eye on it. I met a guy in Boulder, and man, I'm telling you, this guy was sketchy. He was bobbing and weaving, man. I didn't know him, and he comes up and he was like almost ghosting me, you know, and he was fractured. And I said, what's going on? And he said, my doctor's got me on some things. And all the names, I enjoyed everybody putting out another name of the drugs because I don't know them. And anyway, he laid out these names, and I said, would you talk to your psychiatrist? Why don't you talk to your psychiatrist and see if that can maybe be dialed down a little bit? This guy's got a top secret clearance. He's doing work for the Defense Department. I'm trying to save the country. Anyway, so he did that, and we did some work together, and you know what? He got off of the drugs. The drugs were absolutely spooking the hell out of him. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about a judgment here. I'm talking about an experience. The drugs were spooking him. He got a chance to work the programs on alcoholism, and he's doing fine. So that's my portion of the thing, and then I'll let you talk about steel on steel. Mills, did that address it in the least?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'd like to just add on one thing to that, too. It's similar to the recovery date thing. That's really nobody else's business. We don't have to broadcast what we're doing with our doctors and Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I don't know, because I've had the same experience where I've absolutely seen individuals, you know, work with their doctors to get off of medication, go on and have a very abundant life. But I've seen other instances where, very similar to what Mickey was saying, they get off and things just fall apart. There's a literal medical thing going on, and we can't pretend like that doesn't exist. We're not doctors, right?
But we play one
we
on
do.
TV.
Yeah. We do, yeah. So, but in terms of the steel-on-steel exercise, I mean, I guess I don't really have an opinion one way or the other at this particular period of time. Do I think it was there was a time in my recovery where that was a great exercise in camaraderie and vulnerability for me, and it worked well when I did it. I did it with people I trusted, and that worked really well, and I did it with people, like I mentioned last night, that I didn't trust, and that was a horrible experience, right? I just forced myself into it because I thought it would be good. Do I think it's a could I push aside my program and just do steel on steel and be okay? I don't think so. Actually, no, not. But is it an effective add-on, an effective supplement to what we do?
Sure, right? I mean, if I have the time and I'm in the place to be able to do it, and it's a part, you know, I feel compelled to do it, right? Or I'm in a position where I think it'll help to try to get me to a point where I can be a little more vigilantly honest. But also, just as a side note, for me, like I said last night, it's really important that even if I'm getting accountable and vulnerable with other people, with friends, with groups like that, that the full picture still comes back to my sponsor, right? Like, because I can't piecemeal out myself. It's got to come back to paint the full picture.
Thank you very much. Excuse me, Hunter, we've got like about 2 or 3 minutes.
Go
we
for it.
Maybe talk at lunch or something, but to say goodbye. And I would like to do that and then afford you the opportunity to do that and also acknowledge our schedule. It has been Scott Young Jackson has been loves you guys so much, and he asked me 2 years ago to come to this, and that was in my I'm getting off the circuit mode, and I said no. And then you had one of my sponsees, Peter Marinelli, come in, and he just said great things about it. It's whatever. So for some reason I said yes because I because of the love of God and the love of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to say it's been really wonderful for me to be with you. I'm glad that we didn't, even if we might have had divergent opinions or experiences, we didn't take the time to go into conflict with each other. It's been, you know, there is such a thing as, I can't remember what it's called, but it's active listening. And I have felt that we have been with you in active listening this whole weekend. And it's been a real honor. And I love you. And I am going to miss you. That's this thing happening again. And so I'll take you with me down the road. Thank you for your hospitality, for your love, for your hard work in the program. I'm glad to see so many newer people coming in here and giving this sucker a shot. It is so worth it. God bless you and keep you. You'll surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to extend my thanks to this entire group, to everyone that is involved to put it on, and just everyone for being here and being a part of it. I mean, I've met a lot of people in a lot of different places, and this is a special group, and I think you all know that. In terms of active listening, 100%. Like, I've just felt over the course, I mean, it's not uncommon to be given a talk up here and to just see everyone's just completely uninterested. And as I'm looking around, I'm literally feeling like I'm connecting with everybody I'm locking eyes with, and I know for a fact that that's what's happening, except for this guy. But it's really been a great experience in to be able to talk, and I've had so many people come up to me in between sessions, and I just love that. You know, I love the opportunity to connect with people outside of what we're doing just at this table. And I know I'll be talking to some of you in the future, right? Because that's what happens. We make these connections, and they're not necessarily, and like, you know, we talk about Mickey, we're not just here to be the entertainment for the weekend.
No, we didn't come here to dance, know? In case you hadn't noticed.
And sometimes that is the case, right? You go to a conference, you get entertained for a weekend, you go home, right? It's bigger than that. Like what we're talking about here, it's so much bigger than that. It's so much deeper. And the fact that multiple people have said, you know, we've never really kind of had an experience like we've had over the course of this weekend. It's been different, right? I guess it's a relative term, but I'll take that as a good thing, you know? But so at the same time, I just want to reiterate, the hospitality's been amazing. I, too, have just loved being here with you guys. It's a special group. And I love you all as well. We have that connection one way or the other, no matter where we're at. Like Mickey was talking about in the Fellowship of the Spirit, we're just going back to our respective corners of the globe to light the fire, you know? That's what happens. We don't come here and go home and get sad that it's over. We go and we do God's work. We take that charge and we take it, right?
And I want to say something about this man sitting next to me. I want us to underline the fact that 10 years?
Yeah.
He's 10 years sober. He's working with people that are 30 years sober. It's not a function of age. It's a function of surrender. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's not like there's an age barrier in here that's age appropriate. I couldn't be prouder of him. It's not my place to be proud of him, but I am in any event. Anyway, thank you kindly.
Yeah, thank you.